This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Justice, peace, and reparations is the clearest statement that we can make that black people are re-entering political life despite the fact that Barack Obama is president of the United States.
Black is back and forever will be.
Black is back, all in, we're gonna win, check it out.
KPFT Houston.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
Hello, my name is Robert Mark, and I am a candidate for the KPFT Pacifica local station board. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri before moving to Texas, where community-based talk radio was invented by a gentleman by the name of Robert Hyland back in the 1950s. I love radio, and I love locally produced community service radio, networking with organizations to further the mutual aims of the station and those organizations. And I would appreciate your vote for the local station board.
That was a statement by Robert Mark. For complete candidate statements and more information about all of your candidates for the local station board, please visit kpft.org. The future of KPFT and the entire Pacifica network now rests upon the participation of our listener members. Let your voice be heard with your vote. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski. Jennifer's out tonight. Glenn is out tonight. Brian is running the board, and of course, Summer's here also. Tonight is, of course, the fourth Monday of the month, so in the second hour, we're going to be doing Queer Music Heritage, and in that, JD is doing another hour's worth of transgendered music. And as he says, this is his 10th show entirely devoted to the T community since he started doing this show in 2000. It's hard to believe he's been here that long doing great stuff. But before that, in the first hour, we're going to be talking to guest of the Houston GLB Political Caucus. Chris Banks is the president, and Christina Gorzinski is on the board. I'm going to be talking about the upcoming election, and we have a lot of the candidates that have been endorsed by the Political Caucus. We've got city elections and HISD board elections coming up. In the second hour, we have a news wrap, and they're going to be covering the news of the week and a couple of other features, including JD again being part of Audiophile. So all that's coming up in the show tonight. We also want to talk about some of the things that if you've pledged to KPFT in the past and you haven't paid your pledge, please do so. That's what keeps us on the air, and I'm sure we're going to be coming up with another pledge drive around the road here because it is interesting. There was a real interesting story this morning on people in the nonprofit business, how some of the salaries are being cut back and some people are being let go. KPFT, of course, is always struggling. It's not just the current economic conditions, but we're all volunteers here. So let's go to a little piece of music, and we'll be back with our first interview.
There's many strangers pulse out on the plains of West Texas. There's many a young boy who feels things he don't comprehend. Well, small towns don't like it when somebody falls between sexes. Small town don't like it when a cowboy has feelings for men. Well, I believe in my soul that inside every man there's a feminine. And inside every lady there's a deep manly voice loud and clear. Well, a cowboy may brag about things that he does with his women, but the ones who brag loudest are the ones that are most likely queer. Cowboys are frequently secretly fond of each other.
Bones are strong.
What did you think those saddles and boots was about? There's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels. escorts his brother. Inside every cowboy, there's a lady who'd love to slip out. Well, 10 men for each woman was
then we, after this, we go to This Way Out, the entire show.
Somehow those cowboys must have kept themselves warm late at night. Well, cowboys are famous for getting riled up about fairies.
There's nothing there.
But I'll tell you the reason a big strong man gets so uptight. Cowboys are frequently secretly fond of each other.
We're just like we're having a discussion.
That's why they wear leather and Levi's with belts buckled tight. There's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels towards his brother. There's many a cowboy who's more like a lady at night. Well, there's always somebody who says what the others just whisper. And mostly that someone's the first one to get shot down dead. When you talk to a cowboy, don't treat him like he was a sister. Don't mess with a lady that's sleeping in each cowboy's head. Cowboys are frequently secretly fond of each other. Even though they take speed and drive pickups and shoot their big guns. There's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels towards his brother. There's many a cowboy who keeps quiet about things he's done.
This is Queer Voices.
And I'm Jack Falinski, and Jennifer is out tonight, not feeling well, and Glenn is, I'm not sure where he is. I think he's on his way back. Tonight we're going to be talking politics. It's not something unusual here, as we usually do the first Monday of the month with David Elliott, who calls in from Washington. But we're going to be talking about local politics. The Houston GLBT Political Caucus, which was founded in 1975, is the oldest GLBT civil rights organization. And it's a very much a grassroots organization where they have a very interesting way that they endorse people. They go through an incredible screening process, and the membership as a whole votes on that screening process. And once that's done, the organization works very hard in getting people elected. With us tonight is Chris Banks, who is the president, and Christina Gorzinski, who is a board member. And it's interesting how you actually, in your name, you tell people how to pronounce it.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's hard for people to get it right the first time unless I warm them up to it.
Or you have that background.
Exactly.
Like I do. Right.
A lot of consonants in her name.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about this. This is an incredible, interesting election this year, with not only a number of... In some ways, people have said the election is going to be somewhat boring because all three major candidates have a lot of, for mayor, have a lot of the same ideas on how the city is going to be run. One of the interesting things is we're in a downturn in the economy, and the endorsed candidate is Anise Parker, who's been on the show many times and is part of this community. So far in that race, has there been any type of, there's been some, but not any major gay bashing?
There's
always that undertone.
And there's been an undertone, yeah. For example, there was after the first fundraising report came out, Peter Brown, who's been a friend of the community in the past and who we endorsed for council actually, sent out a press release afterwards talking about how certain candidates were fundraising in New York and San Francisco, which I think most of us realize are conspicuously gay cities. And of course that was, we think, an attempt to try and bring up the fact, that Anise Parker is openly gay and try and refer back to that kind of in an underhanded way. So there was that, So, you know, we're anticipating seeing more of it as we get closer to Election Day. We don't know who it's going to come out of, or if it's even going to come out of the candidates. It could come out of third party groups. So,
well, there was a little bit of that already that came by some unnamed organization. Although outside of the political junkies, I'm not sure if anybody knew about it.
I don't know how many people saw that. There was a weird email that was actually sent out by the group is real, but that was not them that sent it out. That the group was called Christians for Better Government, and they had already sent out their endorsements. They didn't endorse at all in the mayor's race, and in fact said that they liked Denise Parker.
So far there really hasn't been a third party organization that's done a
overtly
systemic attack. However, there have been sort of those lone bloggers. If you imagine a mad scientist sitting in front of a computer in the middle of the night sending out emails using, again, false names and sending out false information, people may not be terribly excited about this particular election who are not necessarily members of the community, because to them they may look at the candidates and see that they have similar ideas. The caucus endorsed Denise Parker because we believe that there is only one candidate who has the experience to actually execute those ideas and actually achieve the goals that she talks about. We feel that she is the most qualified candidate in the race. She went through our screening process and she did the best. So we endorsed Denise, and we're working very hard for her right now.
I mean, there are three candidates that have a lot of similar ideas in this race, but really only one candidate we think has the ability to execute those ideas, and that's the main reason we're behind Denise Parker. She's the most experienced, the most qualified.
And, of course, KPFT does not endorse any candidates. We're a nonprofit organization, but we're talking to the Houston GLBT political caucus representatives. Well, I think that says a lot about Houston and how far we've moved in the past 20, since like 1985, that this is, it's happening but it's below the surface very much, and it's not overtly. And, in fact, Denise has been elected 6 times citywide, and that has never really come up, overtly. It was always underneath there, and that she's gotten, am I not mistaken, but I think one or two elections she basically didn't have any opposition.
I don't think she's had any opponents for the past two elections, and the first time she was elected controller in the runoff, she was elected with, I think, 62% of the vote, which is a pretty resounding majority.
And one of the things that's so noteworthy about Denise and all of her last, 6 victories citywide is that the only real way to win a citywide election is to build a very diverse coalition of people. And she has a very, very broad range of supporters across every single community. And the caucus has really enjoyed working with members of other organizations who, we've never really seen at caucus meetings before, but we're getting to go out and actually volunteer with members of HOPE and members of other organizations who...
And HOPE is who?
HOPE is the Union of City Employees. I bet that you might be a member, Jack Valensky.
Well, yes, I've actually joined it, although I don't think they've recognized me yet, but that's going to be interesting to see.
Very cool.
Yes, now I can say, it's time to go. My union says so. No, I'm just joking. besides Denise, there's a whole slate of candidates that the caucus endorses, which is nothing unusual. But this time, it seems like we have a number of GLBT candidates running, and in each case, they pretty much seem like they were the best candidate. And actually, that's probably even more important, that the caucus has, in its past, endorsed candidates that are the best, not necessarily GLBT, which sort of goes against some of the thoughts about a GLBT organization. And why don't you talk a little bit about that? How are candidates selected and then endorsed?
Sure. What candidates do is candidates go through a screening process, and what that means is a committee of people from the caucus, who are caucus members, sit down with the candidate and they ask the candidate questions. Not only questions about their feelings on equality for GLBT people, but also questions about their experience and questions about what their vision for the city is. The committee then gives a report to the membership. We have a big membership meeting. We had more than 100 members attended this year. who then vote on which candidates they believe are the most qualified, and that the ones that they know and the ones that they know will be supportive of the community.
So one thing that's very noteworthy about the caucus is that the caucus is very much a board-guided but membership-driven organization. So the screening committee, which is made up of members of the organization, sometimes board members, comes back with a recommendation. However, one of the most exciting things for people who come to our meetings is the process of hearing the candidates speak publicly on our issues before the membership, and then we have them actually leave the room, and then we publicly debate their merits and their viability. Some of the things that come up may be their commitment to our community in the past. Also, really things like how organized their campaign is. Additionally, before they screen with us, we send them a questionnaire that they fill out, filled with questions that are very straightforward, based on anything from employment non-discrimination to marriage equality, basically all the civil rights issues that we as an organization tackle, and we actually get them to fill these out and sign their names at the bottom. So they really do make a firm commitment. Whether they agree with us or not, they state in black and white, and then we review it as an organization. We score them, we vote for them, and then after they get endorsed, we work really hard to make sure that they get elected to office.
And we're really excited about our slate this year. I can just say personally that it's a great slate of candidates, from some of our great incumbents that we're supporting for re-election, like Sue Lovell, Melissa Noriega, Jolanda Jones, Ann Clutterbuck, Wanda Adams, to Ed Gonzalez, James Rodriguez, to some of the candidates that we're endorsing to be elected to city council, like Herman Litt, who's been a longtime friend of the community, a longtime member of the caucus. We're endorsing for at-large position one. Noel Freeman, who is an openly gay candidate, was endorsed by the Victory Fund actually in the past week. Very qualified, wonderful candidate. Lane Lewis for District A, Mike Lasser for District F, Dexter Handy for District G, and of course Ron Green for City Controller, and Amalara for HISD Position 1.
Okay, so now that the endorsement's over with, what is the process that the caucus does to help get people elected?
Well, a lot of people who listen to the show may have seen the cards that we have. We have a card that has all of our entire endorsed slate of candidates on it, and a lot of people get that card and they know the rigors that those candidates had to go through to get that endorsement, and they know that the candidates on that card have a commitment to the community. So they see that card and they vote with that card.
The caucus endorsement card really is the gold standard for progressive politics in the city of Houston. So people are going to get this card in the mail, so keep your eyes peeled. Look in your mailbox for your caucus endorsement card. You'll also see some people working in early voting locations. We'll be doing block walking, phone banking. We really are, as Jack said, we're a grassroots organization, as he knows very well. And so that's where our strengths lie. And we've actually got an event coming
up.
Well,
let's talk about that.
Okay.
It takes money to do what you all do. There's no paid staff and people who volunteer, but it also takes money to do the mail outs and do some of that work, keep the office open. And so how do you accomplish that?
We've got two events coming up. The first one's going to be a volunteer event on October the 10th. It's going to be a day of service. It's going to be honoring not only National Coming Out Day, but also the National March that's going to be taking place in D.C. So on October 10th, we're going to be meeting at the caucus office at 1915 Commonwealth at 11:30. We're going to get you trained on various volunteer opportunities, feed you lunch, and then send people out to volunteer in the community for the rest of the day. The next morning at 11:30 is going to be our Equality Brunch.
We're really excited about this brunch coming up. It's going to be at House of Blues at 11:30 on October 11th. Tickets are $75, which is not much considering what it'll go to for the caucus. That endorsement card that we talked about briefly, we have to pay for that to be printed. We have to pay for the postage to send it out. And the unity by which the GLBT community votes is really the strength by which our community is measured. So getting that card out is key to making sure that the GLBD community votes as one. So it's very important that we get that card out. And so the tickets to that brunch will be, not only will you get breakfast, and not only will you get a free gospel show that the House of Blues puts on, but you will also be making a donation to the caucus to get that card out to make sure the GLBD
We're not supposed votes. To mention the prices here on KPFT.
I'm sorry.
But how can people get in more information about the brunch, about the events that are coming up?
Well, they can check out the front page of our website, www.thecaucus.org. And there's information on the time and the place, and if you want to check out the ticket price, it's on there, too.
Okay. So you're also looking for a lot of volunteers to work both early election, which is coming up. That's the third week of next month, which is just less than a month away right now. And early voting goes on for 11 days, I believe it is, that... We're trying to get people who, you know, are not working or can take the day off, plus Election Day. Election Day is when you're really looking for volunteers, correct?
Right. A lot of people can count on some calls from me in the next coming weeks to make sure that we have people out there. If you're listening to this and you want to volunteer, you can email me at info@thecaucus.org. That's info@thecaucus.org to sign up to volunteer. We would love to have you. You can check us out on Facebook, too, and on Twitter, HGLBT Caucus on Twitter, and Houston GLBT Political Caucus on Facebook. Whatever you can do, whatever capacity that you can volunteer, we can use you. So anything, if you don't know what you can do or if you don't know what to do, just contact us, and we'll have a place for you.
When you think of volunteering, you can think of it as a way to showcase your talents. So wherever your strengths lie, whether they're in technology, or community organizing, fundraising, making telephone calls, block walking, whatever you do well, you have a place in the movement, and your place is probably at the caucus. So whether you're motivated personally or professionally or politically, We don't care what motivates you. We want you to come and participate with us. The best opportunity coming up is going to be our day of service again. That's on October 10th at 11:30 in the morning. Includes lunch. We're going to be doing volunteer. We're going to volunteer opportunities in the afternoon. And again, the next morning is our equality brunch. We're actually going to be honoring some local officials and some local leaders for their commitment to community service and their commitment to the GLBT community at the brunch. So it's another reason to come and have brunch with us on October the 11th.
So is that list secret?
It was until tonight. We'd like to make our announcement of the awards that we're giving at the brunch here on the show tonight.
So we're going to be doing four awards at the brunch, and the first is going to be the Eleanor Tinsley Award, which goes to an honoree who does not identify as a member of the GLBT community, but who has been an extraordinary advocate for the GLBT community.
And Eleanor Tinsley, just for some background, was a city council member who was endorsed in our first election by the caucus and was one of the first real advocates that we had out there. And she passed away this year, and we wanted to honor her with that award. And we couldn't think of anyone more appropriate to give it to than to Representative Garnett Coleman. Garnett Coleman represents the 147th House District in the Texas House of Representatives, and he has been a very strong advocate for our community. He files bills and pushes for them to advocate for the community. There's no one better that we could give it to, I think.
The second award is going to be the John Paul Barnich Award, and that will go to an honoree who has demonstrated an extraordinary commitment to justice for the GLBT community.
And John Paul Barnich was the first openly gay municipal judge in Houston, and was a strong advocate for justice for the community. And we're giving that award to Phyllis Fry. She's currently a lawyer with Fry Cantu. She's an advocate for the transgender community and a long time advocate for the transgender community, and has really been out there and been an advocate for justice for the whole community. So happy with that.
So far, both of the people that we're honoring are also members of the caucus. I just want to point that out as well. The third award is the Caucus Leadership Award. It's for a member of the GLBT community who has shown extraordinary leadership during the last year.
And we'll be giving that to Judge Stephen Kirkland. Judge Kirkland was elected last year. He represents the largest constituency of any openly gay official in the United States. I think he was recently surpassed by the Vice Chancellor of Germany worldwide, but that's still pretty impressive, I think, to represent more than 4 million people in Harris County.
He's voted by the entire Harris County.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he was elected by the whole county.
Another caucus-endorsed candidate as well. And additionally, the caucus will be honoring Councilmember Sue Lovell for her lifetime achievement in public service and community activism at the brunch.
And Sue Lovell, of course, is a city council member, is endorsed for re-election. We're very proud of her. She's a former president of the caucus. And she was recently elected vice chair of the LGBT caucus of the Democratic National Committee.
Okay.
It's a pretty nice lineup.
Right. So all sounds very exciting. So let's do a recap here. Somebody wants to get involved. How can they do that?
Email info@thecaucus.org.
That's the best way to get a hold of us. I mean, you can also get on Facebook, get on Twitter. We can hear from you there.
On Twitter, we're HGLBT Caucus. And on Facebook, you can just search for HGLBT Political Caucus, and you'll find us. You can become a fan or follow us.
Yeah.
Okay, we are talking to Chris Banks, who's president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and Christina Gorzynski, who is a board member. You can also get information on our website, queervoices.org, or go directly to their website, thecaucus.org. You're listening to Queer Voices.
In roller derby, when we're on the track, we really don't differentiate between gay, straight, bisexual, transgender. If you can play the game, you're willing to play, come on out.
What happened to the care in healthcare? Where'd it go?
Walked out the door and broke my heart. Black, white, doesn't matter, gay, straight, you feel better.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The verdict over a slain soccer star exposes South African injustice. Roller derby's worldwide revival embraces diversity. And topical tunes, bi-coastal love, and relationship rock in the audiophile. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 26, 2009. A judge in South Africa issued a mixed verdict this week in the high-profile trial of three men accused of brutally raping and murdering soccer star and lesbian activist Yudi Simulane last year. One was sentenced to life in prison, but two were acquitted for lack of evidence. All three were implicated by a fourth man who pleaded guilty to the murder in February and was sentenced to life in prison, but he subsequently denied their involvement. According to the New York Times, the Simulane case has been central to a campaign to bring attention to attacks against lesbians and gay men. But sexual orientation was never established as a motive at the trial. The judge was uncomfortable with the term lesbian itself, asking the prosecutor, "Is there another word that you can use instead of that one?" Simulane, who was 31 years old, was murdered in April 2008 while walking near her home southeast of Johannesburg. Robbery was the alleged motive. The men decided to rape the star of the country's national women's soccer team when they discovered that she had no money. They then stabbed Simulane to death when they realized that she recognized one of them. Carrie Johnson of the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission said of the verdict that The killer showed no remorse, the police are indifferent, and the courts provide no redress for lesbian victims. How can South Africa end epidemic levels of violence without effectively prosecuting crimes against its LGBT citizens?
In other news, the Legislative Assembly in the Australian Capital Territory will once again try to establish civil unions that include legal ceremonies for same-gender couples. Gays and lesbians can already register their relationships in the semi-autonomous territory, but they're prohibited from holding legally binding ceremonies. The territory's Labor Party voted unanimously in a caucus meeting this week to support the Green Party's introduction of the Civil Partnerships Amendment Bill. It's expected to pass. But previous attempts by the Legislative Assembly to create civil unions with legally recognized ceremonies were overturned in 2006 and again in 2008 by the federal government, which can veto any Australian Capital Territory law because it's a territory and not a state. While the territory's Labor Party supports the bill, the federal Australian Labor Party, as did the Liberal Party government before it, says the proposed legislation is too similar to marriage and violates a law that defines marriage as exclusively heterosexual.
Washington voters will be asked on November 3rd to uphold the everything but marriage expansion of the U.S. state's domestic partnership law by voting yes on referendum 71. And a poll this week suggests that it's going to be close. It's on the ballot following a successful petition drive by Protect Marriage Washington, which opposes the law approved earlier this year by the legislature and signed by the governor. According to The Stranger, a Seattle alternative weekly, the poll by Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research asked 569 respondents who said they plan to vote in the November election about referendum 71. 51% said they would approve it, 44% said they would vote no, and 5% were undecided. Some analysts say that the law could be in trouble because conservatives tend to vote more regularly than LGBT rights supporters in non-presidential elections, and because ads by opponents of Referendum 71 are equating domestic partnerships with same-gender marriage.
Recent polls show another close race in Maine on question one, which will ask that state's voters on November 3rd to repeal the marriage equality law passed by the legislature and signed by the governor earlier this year. Broadcast ads by Yes on One feature a school teacher and parents expressing concern about the supposed impact of marriage equality on education. They're near duplicates of those that ran in California last year for Proposition 8. The parents who object to the children's book King and King being read in their child's class, it's about a prince who falls in love with another prince, are in fact from Massachusetts, and the husband's father was a leader in the Mormon Church. David Connerty Marin of the Maine Department of Education said that nothing currently prevents a teacher from reading King and King or any other book to a class unless they were told not to by their local school district. And he's not aware of any controversy over the book in his state. The high school English teacher who warns in another ad that homosexual marriage will be taught in Maine public schools is the state director of Concerned Women for America, a right-wing religious group. And she teaches at Calvary Chapel Christian School, which, as a private institution, is not governed by the Maine Department of Education. In any case, Professor David Clucci of the University of Maine School of Law told reporters that there's nothing in Maine law that mandates that a school district engage in some kind of educational program around marriage. Meanwhile, the Maine chapter of the American Academy of Pediatricians this week announced its opposition to the ballot measure. As physicians who care for children and their families, the group said in a statement, we are committed to supporting what is best for children. And there is no question that when their parents can marry, children are more protected legally and socially.
Language was filed this week for a ballot initiative in California to repeal Proposition 8. The grassroots group Love, Honor, Cherish submitted proposed language for the November 2010 ballot, which will include midterm congressional elections and the California gubernatorial race. The ballot measure, if passed, would replace Proposition 8 language in the state constitution. Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California, with marriages between only two persons and shall not be restricted on the basis of race, color, creed, ancestry, national origin, sex, gender, sexual orientation, or religion. It also says that to protect religious freedom, no court shall interpret this measure to require any priest, minister, pastor, rabbi, or other person authorized to perform marriages by any religious denomination, church, or other nonprofit religious institution to perform any marriage in violation of his or her religious beliefs, and protects them from discrimination lawsuits. Submitting wording to the California Attorney General is the first step in qualifying a measure for an election. Once the language is approved, backers would have until mid-April to gather 695,000 signatures needed to put the initiative on the November 2010 ballot. Equality California, the state's largest LGBT rights organization, prefers a repeal effort in 2012. They and several other groups worry that 2010 will be too soon after voters approved the same-gender marriage ban last November.
Elsewhere, an ordinance adding LGBT city employees to categories covered by Nashville, Tennessee's anti-discrimination laws passed the Metro Council last week. It bans bias against city workers based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Similar efforts have failed in the past. 24 council members voted in favor of the controversial ordinance, 15 opposed it, and one was absent.
But protests continued in Atlanta, Georgia this week over the brutal September 10th police raid of the Eagle Gay Bar. About 60 demonstrators stood in the pouring rain outside City Hall, vowing to keep the issue in the political spotlight. 8 employees and underwear-clad dancers were arrested during the raid for allegedly providing adult entertainment without having the proper permit. The police, many reportedly making anti-gay slurs, also forced some 60 people face down on the floor and kept them there while they were searched and their IDs were checked. According to a report in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution newspaper, for up to 2 hours, some customers lay face down in grime and spilled beer waiting for their turns. 9 complaints have been filed with the Police Department's Office of Professional Standards. Police said the raid was in response to alleged drug sales and backroom sex at the bar. The department said undercover officers had observed backroom sex on previous visits. However, no one was arrested on drug or sex charges during the earlier visits or the September 10th raid. Atlanta Police Chief Richard Pennington told reporters that, "It's very unfortunate this incident occurred. I'm sorry for what happened, but I want to get to the bottom of this."
And finally, it was a pathetically wacky week for some homophobic U.S. politicians. Pennsylvania Republican State Representative Daryl Metcalf held up a House resolution making October Domestic Violence Awareness Month because he said it referenced men as well as women victims of rape and abuse and would therefore advance the homosexual agenda. Meanwhile, U.S. Congressman Stephen King of Iowa told a conservative radio network that same-gender marriage is a radical social idea and a purely socialist concept. Opponents have also called President Obama's efforts at health care reform socialism. But the most jaw-dropping comments came from Michael Schwartz, the chief of staff for right-wing Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. Condemning pornography at the Family Research Council-sponsored annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. this week, during a panel called The New Masculinity, Schwartz said that pre-adolescent boys have less tolerance for homosexuality than just about any other class of people. And he said, "All pornography is homosexual pornography because all pornography turns your sexual drive inwards. If you tell an 11-year-old boy about that, do you think he's going to want to go out and get a copy of Playboy? I'm pretty sure he'll lose interest. That's the last thing he wants." Borrowing a phrase from openly gay Congressman Barney Frank in response to an outrageous comment during a town hall meeting on health care reform a few weeks ago, one has to wonder on what planet Mr. Schwartz resides.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 26, 2009, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
A Pharmafoki dispenses RX and the side effects, a versatile performer wants to stay, and a rocker asks if you've got love, later in the program. The worldwide grassroots resurgence of roller derby is providing a welcome oasis of inclusion for LGBT athletes. This Way Out correspondent King David McKenzie looks back on where the sport has been and where it is today.
She comes from Kansas City in the middle of the land. She was the queen of the game, but love never came with a man, with a man. Now all they know is her name. She's a Kansas City bomber. Let her roll, let her roll.
Back in 1972, roller derby was so popular that even Phil Oakes, that most political of the 60s Greenwich Village folkies, was a fan, leading him to write and record this theme tune for the 1972 movie Kansas City Bomber. MGM, the film's distributors, didn't use it in the theatrical cut of the flick, but Oakes had A&M Records put it out as a single anyway. Roller Derby had been developed in Chicago during the Great Depression of the 30s and became so popular during that time, continuing through the World War II years, that when ABC started their television network in 1948, one of the first things they scheduled was a weekly roller derby match live from the 14th Regiment Armory in Brooklyn. By September 1949, it became so popular a television draw that ABC aired it three nights a week in prime time on Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. The sport also continued successfully after leaving the ABC network with two leagues, the International Roller Derby League out of San Francisco, where the Bay Area Bombers were the powerhouse to beat at Kezar Pavilion, and the National Roller League out of the Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles, featuring longtime league champions, the Los Angeles Thunderbirds. The top stars in both leagues were household names throughout America, like the ultimate heel psycho Ronnie Raines and the infamous Ann Calvello, whose purple hair and super surly attitude made her a punk rocker decades before anybody ever heard of the Sex Pistols. Roller derby was a staple of American television through the 1960s and 1970s, but for some reason in the 80s, it evaporated until you couldn't find it anywhere on the TV dial. Then in 2001, first in Austin, Texas, then in Phoenix and Tucson, Arizona, then nationwide, before anybody knew it, derby was back.
I'm back!
Teams of female amateur roller derby skaters began starting their own municipal leagues, independently of any commercial organization. These leagues took the basic rules of the original sport and, unlike the commercial versions of the 60s and 70s, which had begun to borrow professional wrestling's trappings of kayfabe, constructing choreographed storylines around the action on the track, they started playing the sport legitimately again. The skaters developed their own culture of spoofing the hype of commercial sports by adopting track names like Helen Wheels, a legend in Phoenix and now in Tucson, or Punky Bruiser and Venus Envy in Austin. And although some leagues like the Los Angeles Derby Dolls and the TXRD Lone Stars in Austin hold their bouts on banked tracks like the original derby skaters did, most of the new breed skate their bouts on the same flat track surfaces as roller hockey and indoor soccer. There are now literally hundreds of amateur roller derby leagues across North America, Europe, New Zealand, and Australia, with some cities being home to two or more. The Phoenix metro area alone is now home to the Arizona Roller Derby, Renegade Roller Girls Arizona, the Arizona Derby Dolls, the Valley Fever Roller Demons, and Tempe's Desert Dolls Roller Derby. That's only accounting for the women skating the sport. There have recently been new teams and leagues formed of male derby skaters, such as the Dry Heat Derby here in Tucson. One of the skaters, Space Case, happens to be an out gay man, and he says other out gay male derby skaters are finding out what their lesbian counterparts in the new amateur leagues have been knowing for a long time already.
There's not a backlash. Like, you can be open in roller derby, opposed to as a football player would get backlash for being openly gay. In roller derby, we're a team. And we really, when we're on the track, we really don't differentiate between gay, straight, bisexual, transgender. If you can play the game and you're willing to play, come on out. And I think it's awesome because the guys that I skate with are just, they're like my brothers. it's awesome to be around him. We joke, we have a good time, but when it comes down to business, we skate hard, we play hard, and we have a lot of fun doing it. I've never really been into any type of sports throughout my entire life except for roller derby, and now that I get a chance to play, it's nice to have a good group of people, some good friends around you.
Well, you can play my game if you just tell me your name. Well, you can play.
The commercial mass media have certainly noticed the roller derby resurgence. In 2006, A&E ran the reality series The Roller Girls about the TXRD Lone Star League in Austin and subsequently released it on DVD. The theme tune was something by the Donnas called Play My Game. That's the tune that you're hearing in the background right now. And now, for the first time since 1972, a major film studio, in this case Fox, is releasing a Hollywood movie about roller derby, titled Whip It. It's Drew Barrymore's first crack at directing a feature film. It's already getting a lot of great reviews from its world premiere screening at the Toronto International Film Festival a couple of weeks ago. Whip It is scheduled for wide release throughout the United States and Canada on October the 2nd, and in Australia and other parts of the world a week after that. I asked Spacecase what plans the Dry Heat Derby had in mind for their future.
Keep it skater-owned and operated. Basically, we get to say what we want to put on the track. You know, we don't have sponsors saying, okay, you got to do this, you have to do that. We're in control of our league, and I like that. Right now, we're actually have a team building up in Phoenix. And so we'll have a team down here in Tucson, Dry Heat Militia, and a team up in Phoenix called the Dry Heat Rattleskates. And finally, we're going to have a team close enough that we'll be able to play on a regular basis. Right now, the men's leagues are so far spread out that the closest to us would probably be Dallas and Tacoma. There's nothing on the West Coast as of yet.
Check out derbyroster.com and find out where your nearest roller derby league is located. And I'll see you at the track. From the studios of affiliate KXCI in Tucson, I'm King David McKenzie.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
A new This Way Out update has been posted on our website. For recent programming information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to www.thiswayout.org.
This month's audio file introduces us to a couple of newcomers and brings back a past favorite.
One, two, three, go!
There are ads on the TV and the radio, in newspapers and magazines too. The drug industry is marketing you. Created disease, convince you that you might be ill. So you run to your doctor's office for their new little pill.
Prescription chaos, it's the American way. We can all feel better, take some drugs today.
That very topical song starts off this month's edition of Audiophile. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and the artist goes by the name Link. She devoted her entire album, called RX and the Side Effects, to an issue now very much in the news.
I was an independent pharmacist for my entire career, and I owned my own pharmacy. And at some point in time, it just was no longer fun for me. I didn't like the way healthcare was changing, and I was feeling like a pawn in a game that I didn't want to play anymore. So I sold the pharmacy and wrote some scathing songs about healthcare from an insider's point of view.
What happened to the care in healthcare? Where did it go? What happened to the care in healthcare? Don't you know it's burning at the stake of the HMO? Profits over people, money over hell. They play their games and deny the claims so they can build their wealth.
You can learn more about the album, RX and the Side Effects, by Link at www.linkmusic.com. That's www.linqmusic.com.
Waiting for the next train to come. Standing there, thinking, what have I done? I walked away in the bright light of day, and I turned my back on the one reason I should stay. Stay in LA.
Splitting his time between LA and New York City, Joe Settimeri is a singer, songwriter, and actor in musicals with a brand new album called Stay.
This is my new album, Stay. It's my debut CD. I'm really excited about it. We've pulled from all aspects of the music world. We've pulled from jazz, country, and rock. And I've written about things that we all care about, like love, and losing love, and happiness, and joy. Things that everyone goes through on a daily basis.
You can get more information about Stay, the debut album by Joe Settimeri, at www.joesettimeri.com. And Settimeri is spelled Settineri.
What you gonna do when fear's in the way? What you gonna do is pray. Love comes in and love's here to stay. There's no better way than to live in love right here, right now. Running away, it is because of you I stay. You change the way that I look at myself and the world today. And then we agree that give enough to reach and make our fears we have just go away.
Josh Zuckerman definitely can rock. And his latest album poses the musical question, Got Love?
Got Love is my third CD that was recorded by the same producer that produced my last CD. It includes 12 new songs, all original music, and it all talks about the journey that most people go through when they're experiencing love, whether it's in a relationship or out of a relationship.
Let's speak the words to the parents that will preach to their kids that are freaks. Just because they're different doesn't really matter what they say, what they see. All their children in the mirrors of their own society. Black, white, doesn't matter, gay, straight, thin or fat.
Find out more about Got Love, the new album by Josh Zuckerman, at www.joshzuckerman.com. That's www.joshzuckerman.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can learn more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Chris Wilson, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, King David McKenzie, Sherry Lund, and J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Phil Oakes, Susie Quattro, The Donnas, Link, Joe Settinari, and Josh Zuckerman performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by voluntary program acquisition payments by our affiliate stations and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, read each week's news wrap, and subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KPOV Bend, Oregon, CITR Vancouver, British Columbia, WJSC Johnson, Vermont, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. For the 1,122nd time, please do stay tuned.
Yes, that was This Way Out, and this is Brian Levinka. I wanted to talk to you a second about the National Equality March, which is coming up October 10th and 11th. And there is a large group from Houston that's planning on going, and there, for those of you out there who are having hard economic times, there's a more economic version of or available option available to you. If you go to the website NEM, National Equality March, Houston.blogspot.com, that's NEM Houston.blogspot.com. You can get information on the different vans that are leaving from Houston. Now, they're driving from Houston to D.C., leaving either on Friday or Saturday. So you can hook up with that and you can arrive there. It's a 21-hour drive, but, you know, you get to be there for the march. So check out that website. It's NEM Houston.blogspot.com. And I'm proud to announce that we are going to be marching as a state. We talked to people from Dallas and from Austin and even people from Fort Hood and College Station to get us together as a group walking for equality for the state of Texas. And if you have any questions about this and if you feel like you need to go and be part of this momentous march for equality, you can email NEM, National Equality March, Houston at gmail.com. Again, that's NEM Houston at gmail.com. Or you can email me, Brian Levinka, at Brian, B-R-Y-A-N 2, at pdq.net. Again, I hope you can join us. It's October 10th and 11th, and the march is actually Sunday, October 11th in D.C. Hope you can join us.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
I'm Bill Crozier, a candidate for the KPFT local station board. Imagine people at work or school talking about a station that dares to speak the truth about unchecked corporate power and influence in Congress and the state government. Imagine your friends telling each other about news and issues that are never covered on TV. Imagine them getting excited about local musicians who they've never heard on any commercial station. KPFT can help turn the tide for peace and justice, but only when more people know about it. We must work together to reach more listeners so we can make our station a more influential voice for truth and reason. Will you help us in this by telling your family, coworkers, and online friends about your favorite KPFT programs? Let's make KPFT known as the place for uncensored news, music, and public affairs in our area. I'm Bill Crozier, and I thank you for supporting our station for peace.
That was a statement by Bill Crozier. Let your voice be heard with your vote. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on front for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for people.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
I'm in love with a girl, but she used to be a man. Somewhere in between, she had a change of plans. I'm in love, fell in love. I've got a story that I need to tell.
Welcome to Queer Music Heritage, and this is J.D. Doyle. I'm heard every month as a part of Queer Voices on KPFT. And since I began QMH in 2000, this is my 10th show entirely devoted to the music of transgendered artists. And I love doing shows like this, as it not only gives me a chance to share their music, but also to share a bit of their lives and journeys. In 2007, I did a series of 4 shows in a row, so now I'm going to sort of catch up with the music mostly newer than that. And I've got, I think, a very interesting feature interview. It's with Radford Bishop of the queercore band Tough Tough Skin, one of the very few bands I know of where all the members were trans men. More on that in a while. I want to mention that the opening song was, well, I think, the perfect one to start off this show. It was by an Atlanta band led by, and this is her term, transgender bender Amber Taylor. The band is called The Sexual Side Effects, and the song was, I'm in love with a girl who used to be a man. Next up from the UK is Jenny Slater.
Basically, Zodiac is a collection of songs about the human condition, obviously from a transsexual point of view. But hopefully I've managed to sort of do the songs in such a way that most people can identify with them.
Was Jenny Slater. Her debut album called Zodiac was released in 2008, and I think it's excellent. We heard her song Run and Hide. Up next is Anthony Haggerty, who is better known under the name of his music group, Anthony and the Johnsons. He's released 3 studio albums since 1998 and a number of EPs, garnering him much praise. From his 2005 album, I Am a Bird Now, I want to play for you a track called For Today I Am a Boy.
One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful woman. One day I'll grow up, I'll be a beautiful girl. One day I'll grow up, be a beautiful woman. One day I'll grow up, be a beautiful girl. But for today, I am a child. For today, I am a boy. For today, I am a child. For today, I am a boy. One day I'll grow up, I feel the power in me. One day I'll grow up, this I'm sure. One day I'll grow up, I'll know womb within me. One day I'll grow up, feel it full and pure. But for today, I'm a child. For today, I am a boy. For today, I'm a child. For today,
thank you. up. She says, "How's my daughter?" 'Cause she can't see that part of me is being slaughtered. "Well, Mom," I said, "I've been around the world and I've been named, but I'm still the same. I'll always be your girl." And she sounds trepidatious. She says, "I don't know if I can face this." I said, "Well, cover your eyes and listen to me, world."
Followed Anthony and the Johnsons with a trans man artist I recently heard about. He's Geo Wyeth, and he records under the name Novice Theory. His first album from last year is called At the End We Listen. I want to get to our feature interview, and as already announced, it's with Radford Bishop, who played guitar and drums and was one of the vocalists of the Minneapolis queercore band Tough Tough Skin. I learned about them when I was researching my show on queercore and was very impressed with their music and their album, which was called Let It Sink Down. What I didn't know then was that Radford was in another queer act earlier, before his transition. And I love that this is a chance to share music by an artist in sort of a before and after way. The earlier act was called Winter Machine and included a very fine gay artist, Coleman Lindbergh, who has other releases on his own. Their joint Winter Machine album from 2002 was called A Few Things I Believe, and I asked Radford to tell me about that act.
Winter Machine is a project that I was in for about 5 years with another artist, Coleman Lindbergh, and we played what we called folk punk, which can mean a lot of different things to different people, but basically for us, we were mainly folk artists who came together because we had a mutual interest in kind of radical politics and really using the personal as political and sharing our stories as queer artists.
From that album, tell me about the song Going Through.
Well, Going Through is the first track on the album, and it was a song that I started writing and I couldn't finish it. I had all these different pieces that came together, but it wasn't a complete song. And so I asked Coleman if he would collaborate with me and try to fill in some of the lyrics. And so it ended up being this song that was half Coleman and half me, and it was one of our first collaborations.
It's a really good song.
Thanks.
And I like that shows your voice then.
Yeah, definitely.
I get out, I grow out of this phase you say I'm going through. I get up, I get out, I grow out of this phase you say I'm going through. Try to tell them a little more about the pain. I can never give my fear a name. I went out, walked out from school all the house.
drunk you couldn't stand up. Crawled to the bathroom just to throw up, and you would have slept there with me, holding your hair. She said, it's not denial, it's acceptance. And maybe a small dose of codependence. No, really, I'm fine. You should have just left me there.
Time passes, I add another brick to the wall.
I can kiss you now and it's okay with my emotions a safe distance away in time after time. Like Cyndi Lauper said, I'll still catch you when you fall. Sound familiar? Does anyone here care that Mr. 13-year-old All-American boy number 2,700,006 just said, Mom, I'm queer? And she said, you'll grow out of it, dear. Tell me how many brothers and sisters have to drown their fear before they believe that their choice of gender is not what's screwed up here. How many more schools do we have to sue for not recognizing that gay bashing is sexual harassment, too? You are not alone, but I've felt that. And sometimes I'm so suffocated, I think antidepressants are overrated. But give me a pill, a hit, a fix. Anything to numb this.
Time passes, I add another brick to the wall. Wait till you're older. The mantra they gave me just tried to save me. I pass it up, I pass it over. It never helps cause we're never older. And there's still gay youth and straight youth and straight youth and straight youth. And I'll laugh and I'll laugh and still be strong. Day after, day after.
Can you talk briefly about the change in your voice?
Sure. My voice changing was actually something that kept me from starting a medical transition for several years, because I was playing in Winter Machine with Coleman, and the way that our voices fit together was kind of miraculous, and I didn't want to lose that. Now, that project ended independently, and that was when I decided to transition. And I was really scared that I was not going to be able to sing. And I thought about it for a long time, and I just got to a point where I was willing to sacrifice that. If that was what I had to sacrifice to live as the person that I feel I am, then it was worth it to me. And it was still really scary. It was like jumping off this huge cliff. But I figured that I have other musical outlets. I play a number of musical instruments. I really enjoy percussion, and if I lost the ability to sing, I would find other musical outlets. Now, I can't tell you how grateful I am to still be able to sing. I feel incredibly lucky, and even the thought of that I once felt like I could give that up is kind of scary to me, but I'm just really glad that everything happened the way it happened, and I have a different voice now, but it's a voice that I love, and it's a voice that's me, and I don't regret any of those choices.
One trans guy artist I know described it as his voice before didn't seem to match himself, because the voice he had in his head for how he thought he should sound wasn't how he sounded.
Right. That's really interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I always seemed kind of ungrateful, because singing was really my first instrument, and singing was something that I got a lot of compliments on prior to transition, and just kind of all my life, like as a kid, and I resented it. And it's why I started playing guitar, actually, because I felt so uncomfortable having all these people come up to me and compliment my voice, and I don't think I even thought through the fact that maybe my voice didn't fit my internal identity. I don't think I thought that far. It just made me really uncomfortable to be recognized for my voice. And so when I was about 17, I decided that I wanted to play an instrument well enough that people would come up and congratulate me on that and over my singing voice. And I eventually got to that point with guitar.
In the band Tough Tough Skin, Radford started out on guitar and then later switched to drums. Tell me about the band Tough Tough Skin.
Tough Tough Skin is the band that I helped start right before I started my medical transition. And so I kind of transitioned alongside of the band. It was a punk project started by myself and River Gordon. And it was really, we started out playing on electric guitars through these tiny practice amps in River's living room and blossomed into the full band that got signed to Clear Control Records and was able to tour the West Coast.
And tell me about the album.
The album is the only album that we put out, and it is the product of the blood and sweat of 6 years of punk rock that was very queer indeed. We got 17 tracks on the album, and three different members of the band wrote songs, so you've got some diversity there in style and song topic. But they're all kind of short punk rock songs. And we called our style, we kind of dubbed it Queer Nerdcore because people were asking, you know, oh, what kind of music do you play? Well, we could say punk, but that doesn't say it all. We could say queercore, but to somebody who's not familiar with the scene, it's not going to really tell them a whole lot. And so we kind of stuck the nerd in there, which also doesn't tell you anything, except that we're quirky. And that was kind of, that was because we all kind of feel like nerds, you know. We sit at home with our guitars in the middle of the night, or, you know, listening to the college radio stations, and, you know, well, our drummer on the album, Zach, he's a genius. You know, we got a couple college degrees in there and stuff like that. And so that was just kind of our playful way of creating a new style of music, even though, you know, we were maybe playing traditional chord progressions, but we definitely have some quirkiness thrown in there. So that's why we called it Queer Nerdcore. And it ranges from songs that we wrote 6 years ago to songs that we wrote the week before we went into the studio. So there's a really huge range of musical evolution as far as we were concerned. And we mixed them all up, so you can listen to the album and try and pick out the new songs versus the old songs.
I want to get to my favorite song on the album. Tell me about Man Whore.
Man Whore. All right, let me think about the safest way to talk about this song. I'm going to try and phrase it in like what the song meant to me so that I can't get yelled at later. Now, this is an old song for us. We'd been playing it for a lot of years. It was one of the first songs that we played as a band. Well, I didn't write the song Man Whore, but for me, it was pretty significant in the early days of my transition, and it was all about kind of being a slut and running around, and for me, like, the first time I was finally being, you know, hit on by gay guys who didn't know I was trans and I was passing, and your libido goes crazy. It's like going through a second puberty. So your libido goes crazy, and you want to run around with all these boys and not have to apologize for it.
Shotgun wedding divorce, and I just learned how to cruise. It was quite by accident that I found myself beside you. These aren't just my wandering eyes whenever we go out. It's the things I lie and think about when nobody else is around. Love the way you make it, makes you whore. Give up, I can't give it back, cause I'm a man whore. I gave you my cherry, but my heart still stayed with me. Sometimes I kiss you just in one day, you're in love with me. Meanwhile, my phone number's in back pockets all over town.
How did the band get its name?
That one was actually a phrase picked out of a book that we were paging through, but it really resonated with us because being trans, kind of the image of tough skin to me, brings up a lot of images. It's like, one, when you grow up being marginalized or getting teased a lot for any reason, you really have to develop, you know, what they call a thick skin. And so that kind of resonated first off for me. But then there's also the significance of scar tissue being really tough. And a lot of female-to-male trans guys end up getting surgeries, chest surgeries, that leave some significant scarring across the chest. And so the words tough, tough skin, to me, represented, one, that really having to be tough in an emotional sense, and then two, representing the two scars that I have across my chest.
How would you describe the band's music?
I've always described our music as queercore, but that doesn't necessarily say a whole lot either to people who are outside the queer community or specifically speaking to genre. A lot of the songs are punk rock, and, you know, they're loud, they're edgy, but we also have these really melodic lyric lines and melodies. And so I've started now calling it melodic punk rock, just to be more clear to people who aren't familiar with queercore. But I think from an ethics point and a song topic point, we're talking queercore, we're talking political, but also irreverent.
Tell me about the song Second Guessing.
All right, let me think about this for a second. It's a very personal song for me, so I got to figure out how to articulate it right without giving away too many secrets. Okay. Second Guessing is a song that is very personal to me. I was going through some tough things in my life emotionally and in my relationship. And at the same time, in Minneapolis, we had the collapse of the 35W bridge. And that was very significant for a lot of people. It was kind of 2 degrees of separation. And a lot of people had talked to me about how they were supposed to be on the bridge when it collapsed, or they had been driving that direction and turned around for some reason. And in my personal life, I was relating that to, there's a line in the song that says, cars keep moving forward until something starts to break and water turns to carnage and neglect in the place where we connect. And that was really a physical, literal image of this bridge collapsing, but also of my relationship, which was kind of falling apart at the time. And so that song to me was all about getting out that emotion and that fear and anger, and trying to trust myself and trust my instincts and hope that my instincts would keep me safe.
Imagine what's a dream I shape, they know me well.
Tell me about Pass the Whiskey.
Pass the Whiskey is sort of an irreverent song that came out of the frustrations of being a trans person. One of the lines says, thanks to these meds, I blend right in, got this stubble on my chin. Tell me what a person's got to do to get a bathroom wall, unisex or a stall. Because my favorite venue in Minneapolis, to play at least, the men's bathroom used to have a bathroom stall until some drunk punks broke it one night and they took the wall out. So you walk in and it's just a row of urinals and an open toilet. And so that causes some problems for trans guys. And there are just these days when you're tearing out your hair and you just, you know, you can't stand all of the hoops that you have to jump through and everything just seems exhausting and you have to do all these things just to leave your house. And so Pass the Whiskey just came out of all that frustration and was kind of complaining about being trans, but at the same time trying to tell myself to just chill out because you still have to get up and face your day. And if you can't laugh at yourself, then it's going to be a really hard day.
That was Pass the Whiskey.
Hello, Transgendered Hotline. Let me reassure you, you are all woman. That's right, you, sitting there, crossing your legs in that certain fashion, trying to keep your brow from going down when you get angry, and adjusting that wig cap in just the right way so when you sit at Starbucks, you make sure that nothing's hanging out. Thanks for calling Transgendered Hotline, and have a great transgender day.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And this is another one of my shows where I have much too much great material for just 1 hour. In fact, too much for 2 hours. So you can find parts 2 and 3 at my site. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Radford, I love and admire that you and the band have a number of videos on YouTube talking about the trans experience and as it relates to singing.
Yes. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a gift to the people that need this information.
I personally, in my personal life, outside of the band, am a real advocate for trans youth and people who are questioning their gender and thinking about transitioning. So I like to make myself available, and YouTube is a great venue for that. You know, people can ask me questions and kind of see what my experience has been to some extent. And so when I had the opportunity to get the band on YouTube, I really jumped at that because I thought, you know, here we are doing something that not a lot of other people are doing, and we happen to all be trans and can speak to very different experiences through the transition period when it relates to music. So we made a two-part video, and each of the three of us, myself, Chris, and River, all talk about our experience with singing as we started a medical transition and how our voices changed, what was frustrating, what was elating. Chris, for example, kind of stopped singing because his voice started cracking and he didn't know how to use it. He just stopped singing. And so a couple years ago, started to get interested in singing again and kind of had to relearn that whole process, whereas River and I sang pretty much daily from day one of testosterone all the way through, you know, yesterday. And sometimes we just sounded horrible, but we just kept singing and kept singing. And I think that that's a really important thing for trans guys to do who want to continue having a usable singing voice. You've got to use it. You can't, even if you're sitting in a dark room and you're the only person in your apartment, still sing. Your voice is going to crack and you're going to feel silly. But if you keep singing, you're just going to have a much greater likelihood of ending up with a singing voice that you're happy with and that you're confident with and that you know how to use.
I've read that many trans guys have the experience of coming out twice, first as a lesbian.
It's true. It's a really common experience. It's not across the board, but it was my experience. I never use the word lesbian, though. I always call myself a dyke or just queer. And I never thought that through. Those were just the words that felt acceptable to me. And so I came out as a dyke when I was 19. I came out as trans then 4 years later, and it was a lot harder. It was a lot harder for me to come out to my family, especially as trans, than when I came out to them as gay.
Well, people in general know so much less about transgender issues than gay issues.
Yeah.
So, if you mind my asking, your orientation, are you attracted to women?
No, actually, I am pretty exclusively identifying as a gay man, and that changed for me. And that doesn't happen to everybody. I know there's some guys out there who are afraid that they're going to turn gay if they go on testosterone, and it's just not the case. But for me, I had always been attracted to men, and I just wasn't the kind of girl that the men I knew were attracted to, if that makes sense. I think that all has to do with kind of masculinity and how uncomfortable I was with myself at the time and stuff like that. But when I went on testosterone, you know, as soon as I could pass, really, gay guys started hitting on me, and it was very, very quickly apparent that was where my path was leading.
So you went from a lesbian being attracted to women to a trans guy being attracted to men.
Yes. Crazy. crazy. It was actually my girlfriend at the time pointed it out to me, too. She said we had to break up because I didn't like girls anymore. And when she said it out loud, I realized it was true.
Do you know a lot of trans guys?
Do I know a lot of trans guys?
Mm-hmm.
I know a ton of trans guys.
Okay. Now let me ask you kind of if you can generalize. I know this is an individual thing, but I've been curious about the question I'm going to ask for a long time. I know orientation and gender are not the same thing, and if someone tells me they're transgendered, it tells me nothing about their orientation.
Right.
So for trans men, do you have an observation as to are there more of them attracted to men or women?
What I've noticed most is that and this definitely isn't across the board either, but I have noticed that a lot of trans guys have more fluid sexuality. You know, they don't necessarily identify as bisexual because the word bisexual upholds that rigid binary gender system that a lot of us are trying to get away from. So we use, you know, we might use words like queer to describe our sexual orientation. A lot of guys are going to tell you that they are just attracted to the person, more the personality, less than the package. But aside from that, like, I'd say there's a good pool of that kind of sexual identity. But aside from that, I'd say it's like any other gender. There's a bunch of trans guys who like to date women, and there's a bunch of trans guys who like to date men, and there's a bunch of guys somewhere on the spectrum who date men and women, or who date just other trans people, but it doesn't necessarily matter if it's female-identified trans people or male-identified trans people, just other people who have shared that kind of general experience. So it's really varied, and I don't think that you could say that there's more of one than the other.
I guess there are probably a lot of gay guys who are attracted to a trans guy, and then when they find out all of the equipment isn't there, it's a deal breaker.
Yep. That is a problem. Is that a formal question?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it has been my experience that a lot of biological guys, they are attracted to trans men because, you know, we look and sound 100% male to them. They would never think twice about it unless they're familiar with the trans community. And, you know, oftentimes, sadly, the majority of those guys seem to not be interested anymore once they learn more about our physicalities. And our physicalities are really varied, so it's kind of stupid for guys to just assume that they know what our bodies are like. You know, it's kind of disheartening as a gay guy. But I've also met some really amazing men who, for whatever reason, you know, they can see past that. And, you know, I've had several biological gay men say to me, you know, things like, well, I'm turned on, so obviously you're a guy. You know, they get that energy, and they aren't attracted to women, but they're attracted to me, and that tells them that I'm male, which I find really interesting.
In the transgendered artist music scene, who should I know about that I might not?
You know about the Shondas?
Is that how you pronounce their name?
Yeah.
Are they trans?
Some of the members are trans.
Okay.
And they are absolutely hands down one of my favorite bands in the country, period.
Okay.
They are amazingly intelligent, amazingly talented musicians, and they have a lot to say.
Okay, well, that sent me after their music, and I learned more about them from an article in the Village Voice that described them as three-quarters transgender, three-quarters Jewish, and 100% political. Also, the article stated that Shondas is a Yiddish word for disgrace or outrage. So the band says that they're outcasts, even in scenes that celebrate outcasts. Their 2008 debut album is called The Red Sea, and from it is Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
Just like Cameron was too much.
This is J.D. Doyle with Queer Music Heritage, and it's time to finish up the first part of this month's show. I thank you for listening, and especially thank Radford Bishop for the very interesting interview. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I've featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. There's much more to this show on the internet version, where you'll hear 2 more hours of transgendered artists. I've got to share with you there, I think, a fascinating interview with Angela Motter, where we dig deep into the genderqueer spectrum. And there's more. Next month will be another show on transgendered artists, with interviews with the duo Coyote Grace, Namely Brennett, Lisa Jackson, Venus de Mars, and much more. All this, of course, is found on my site at www.queermusicheritage.com. Well, that song by the Shondas put me in a mood for another driving song, and it's by the Clicks, who leaped into the spotlight a couple years ago, thanks to the terrific voice of lead singer Lucas Silveira. He gave me a very interesting interview for my June 2007 show about their debut album, Snake House. They've got a brand new CD now, and I'm closing with the title track, Dirty King.
Hey, I can do the dishes. I am your dirty kicker. I am your dirty kicker.
In keeping with KPFT's mission of bringing the voices of the community to you, here is one of your candidates in the upcoming election for local station board.
Greetings, listeners. My name is Susie Moreno. I am running for the local station board, and I am here to solicit your vote. I am a strong proponent of education. My interest in KPFT is fueled mainly by the fact that its main focus is education of the public. I started listening to KPFT 10 years ago and have been impressed with the content and dedication of many programs that aired, and I became more aware of the need for public non-profit broadcasting. I am running for the station board because I would like to contribute back to something that has meant so much to the community. I believe that KPFT encourages and supports inclusiveness between people, community, and nation. My name is Susie Moreno, and I hope that you consider voting for me.
That was a statement by Susie Moreno, KPFT Houston.
At risk.
Unwed.
Ghetto.
Primitive.
Civilized.
80% of women in prisons are due to domestic violence. In honor of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, WHO presents our third annual The Second Chance Conference, themed The Power of Words. Women Healing and Empowering Women is a reentry program addressing the fastest growing population in prisons presently. Women, as well as domestic violence and homelessness, since these issues are interconnected.
WHO is honored to host a screening of the film Pray the Devil Back to Hell, as well as other films tackling the tough issues WHO advocates on behalf of. There will be breakout discussions addressing how the power of words connect to these issues. October 3rd from 11 to 6 with cocktail fundraisers from 7 to 10 following. Where? Houston Institute for Culture, 708-B Telephone Road. For more information, call 713-208-4276 or email boo, that's B-O-O, underscore Peters at yahoo.com. Why?
When you educate a man, you educate an individual.
But when you educate a woman, you educate a nation.
KPFT Houston.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.